Hey, welcome to Comic Culture, the radio show that continues to champion the local comic book shop. We're broadcasting at 93.3 CFMU, McMaster's award-winning radio station, podcasting at comicbookdaily.com. I'm Walter DeRailia, Overstreet Price Guide Advisor.
And I'm Chris Owen, professor at Hamilton's Mohawk College.
And like we do every week, Chris and I bring it. We bring you all you need to know about comics.
Everything you need to know about comics.
And maybe everything. Even more.
A little bit more.
Like you don't really have to know this much.
You know, there's the odd time that we'll have a listener come in and talk to us about how we've actually helped shape their life.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. That scares the crap out of me.
We should write a book.
Yeah, we should.
We should write a book and talk about how, you know, the do's and don'ts of life by Chris and Walt.
Comic culture. What it's taught us. Back in Marvel, the No Prize?
Yeah.
Where you can open up the letter and there's nothing in it?
There's nothing in it.
That'd pretty well be our book.
Yeah, so for our listeners, in case you're not too sure what a No Prize is.
Right.
A No Prize would be, they actually changed it over a while.
They still have it?
No. Well, I don't know if they do or not.
They used to have it in the old days if you caught a mistake in a Marvel book.
Right. So if you caught a mistake in a Marvel book, you got a No Prize. But then.
That was back in the letter days. You had to send them a letter. Yep. This was like the 70s and 80s.
But they even changed it even then.
Oh.
They changed it so that it wasn't just if you caught a mistake. If you caught a mistake but were able to come up with a plausible reason for that mistake, then you got a No Prize. Like,
right.
Like an even better No Prize. Like,
right.
Because they were just like, well, there's all kinds of mistakes. They kind of figured that was a no-brainer. But then if you could come up with a reason why, like almost like fill in the gap kind of thing,
then
you really got the good No Prize. And the No Prize was basically an envelope from Marvel that had said No Prize on it. And
congratulations.
Congratulations. You're a dweeb.
Yeah. You won nothing.
Yeah.
Except recognition.
You know what? That is true. Recognition.
Well, that's all you need.
Yeah.
That's more than most.
Isn't that all any of us really need?
We just want recognition. We want
recognition.
We want to know, Chris, that we're appreciated.
Right?
Yeah. You know?
Yeah.
And, anyway.
Just want to be loved.
We do.
Yeah.
Chris, we're going to give the love right now to our listeners in the form of your weekly,
It's a segment.
Yes, segment on New This Week. And every week we bring a sponsor to New This Week. And this week's New This Week is brought to you by Cowbell Shinding Club Soda.
Mm.
You can't afford a European club soda? Well, try the Huron County Bubbly.
Right?
It'll hit the spot.
It is good. It is good. Let me tell you. All right. Well, you know what? The first one we got going here is we're going to start with Marvel. We've got Marvel Spider-Man Enter the Spider-Verse number one. Enter the Spider-Verse. So basically, and this is all part of the Spider-Verse series that's going on right now, where they've taken all the different universes of Spider-Man and combined it, and where now they're all, it's a big kerfuffle going on.
Hey, is there a frog Spider-Man?
I don't know.
Remember there was a frog Thor?
There was a frog Thor. Yeah. Frog Thor? Throg.
Throg. I'm just wondering if... Or do you have to be a spider to be a Spider-Man?
Well...
No, because he's a human.
He's a
with
human.
With the power of a spider.
Yes.
Why can't you have a frog with the power of a spider?
Interesting. So you're saying that instead of having, you know...
You know what I mean?
Human,
if you're going into the dimensions of the universes,
so what,
not every
what
species...
What would that look like? So basically you're talking about a frog now that has the power to catch... Spiders?
Crystal, you know what your problem is?
What's that?
You ask too many
questions. You can't just throw out, hey, let's have a spider frog and then not actually come up with a concept around
it. That's all I can do.
Well, you know what? What if we talked about this for a second here?
Okay, let's go.
What if we actually decided to have a frog that had the powers of a spider?
Right.
So basically he'd be able to spin webs.
Spin webs and stick his tongue out. And his tongue would be sticky.
Ah!
Wait a minute, it already is.
It already
sticky.
Is, yeah. This is a terrible idea. All right, you know what? You know what?
All right.
Let's just...
Another one bites the dust.
Another one bites the dust. So, basically, what are we talking about?
The frog would have six legs. Or is it eight?
At least eight legs.
Eight legs.
Spiders have eight legs.
Yeah. Frog would have eight legs.
Yeah.
That would be a cool
one. That would be cool. Hey, yeah. You know what? So it's funny how, you know, spiders have eight legs and Dr. Octopus also has eight legs.
Is that right?
Well, and it's interesting, isn't it?
Is Dr. Octopus a spider?
No, he's an octopus.
But you can have an octopus as a spider
So basically what you're saying is, so instead of having a frog now, we're going to have an octopus.
We can have both.
Oh.
Chris.
Froctopus.
There's no limits.
Okay.
In our,
to our stupidity.
Stupidity, yes. why don't you tell me about this damn book?
I don't even know. I know it's Spider-Man number one, Enter the Spider-Verse. It's got... it's got Spider-Ham in it. It's got Mark Morales. It's got Spider-Gwen. It's got Dr. Octopus and Kraven and all your favorites, basically. You know what? So I'm not going to go on and on about it. It is a big book. It's a $4.99 book. Woo. There's extra pages in it. You know what? Here, I'll just basically what's going on here is the Spider-Men and women from around the multiverse banded together for their own survival. Basically, now they've teamed up with the Web Warriors as well. So there's lots of spider people going on. And that's Spider-Man Enter the Spider-Verse number one.
Now, Spider-Man Enter the Spider-Verse number one is at your local comic book shop.
All right. Next up, we have Uncanny X-Men. Uncanny X-Men number two. Legacy number 621. Mm-hmm. Now, on the cover, we have Jamie Madrox, the Multiple Man. And basically this is a whole story of Jamie Madrox and what's going on, but it's got dinosaurs in it and it's got,
you know what? Dinosaurs is a selling point.
It really is, isn't it? Yeah.
Remember in the old DC Silver Age days, they figured out if they had apes on the cover, it sold more.
Right.
So they would just randomly throw an ape on the cover.
That is true.
That is great.
JB. But that's actually.
We figured it out.
That's actually a thing. People actually collect like gorilla covers from DC.
Yeah,
so,
I know.
Like especially when they've got like the Gorilla City from Gorilla Grodd Gorilla City.
That's right.
You know, but I've got a couple of like Strange Adventure comics.
That's right. Strange Adventures would have just random gorillas
all the time. Stuff, yeah. I actually have one of my prized books is where there's a gorilla robbing a library with a gun because he wanted certain books out of it. Uh-huh. I'm not going to tell you what happens, but it's an interesting read. Let me tell you that.
Wow. Yes. Boy, Chris, your collection is
eclectic.
Sounds amazing.
Yeah, gorillas and baseball players and I've got the best comics ever.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway. If you want to see X-23 ripping out of a dinosaur, you can read Uncanny X-Men number two today.
Hey, Chris.
Yeah.
Why don't you let me do my
job? Oh, I'm sorry.
And just pass me the book and let me say Uncanny X-Men number two is at your comic book shop today.
You're so good at that.
Thank you.
All right. Listen, let's continue on here.
All right.
What else we got? We got Batman number 59. I got a little club soda on my pants here.
Want me to wipe that off for you?
would you mind? okay, we got...
We got a cloth.
Batman number 59 here. The Tyrant King part 2. And this is, by Tom King.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a big storyline that's going on right now with the Penguin.
The Penguin.
Hey,
Chris, what comic book did the Penguin first appear in?
I'm going to say Detective Comics.
Mm, very good.
And I'm going to say it's...
You're halfway there.
Issue number 55.
Eight.
58. It was close.
Good for you.
It was close.
Yes, sir.
Was
he on the cover or not?
No.
Good for you.
No, he was not.
Excellent.
I actually knew that.
Mm-hmm.
So anyways...
Now, in terms of comic book value...
Yes, go on.
Penguin 58... kind of suffers, not Penguin 58, what's called?
Detective Comics 58.
Suffers from the same malaise, not even malaise, but let's say Pep number 22. And so there are great comic books that have fantastic values to them, but the characters they introduce aren't on the cover.
But
those are never as good as a comic book that introduces a major character, and that character is all over the cover. Look at me! Here
okay,
I am.
So let me ask you something.
Ask me.
So, you know, we're going to go into undervalued spotlight on the radio show here.
We are.
Well, you know, it was you're saying that basically the Penguin, the first appearance of the Penguin,
uh-huh.
now he's not as popular as the Joker.
Right.
But,
who is, though?
Well, that's a good point.
Really.
Nobody, really.
Yeah, nobody.
Okay, let's say Scarecrow, right?
I don't know. I thought Penguin was ahead of the Scarecrow.
You think so?
In terms of the canon of... Of Batman villains.
Okay, but is Scarecrow okay? Well, so who would you say is equal to the Penguin? Riddler?
Kind of Riddler.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, and does do either of their Two-Face. First appearances appear on the cover? Does Riddler first appearance appear on the cover?
Riddler does appear.
So is he worth more? Is that worth more
I think
than?
So it is.
Interesting.
But no, but it's older. It's older.
Oh, okay.
Like the Riddler is I think 140 or something like that, or much later. It's much later.
Okay, yeah,
it's like I'm gonna say, you know, 8 years later.
8 years later.
Or 6 years later, or something
right.
like
okay,
that.
Okay, yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's I don't know off the top of my head. I think the Riddlers are I think they're more money.
Riddlers are more money.
No. I think they may be.
Yeah?
Can I pick a vowel? Can I buy a vowel?
Can you call a friend?
Can I call a friend? Yeah, I'm not sure off the top of my head, but I know that. What I do know is this: is the Penguin
what do
issue
you know?
The Penguin issue Detective 58 has really exploded in value in the last 2-3 years, whereas I think the Riddler issue was caught on earlier, and
right.
that might have had something to do with him being on the cover.
Ah, okay, you know, okay.
If he even was on the cover, I don't even remember. But,
right.
Yeah. Can we change the topic?
Sure, sure, yeah.
Yeah, it's but if your first appearance is on a cover, adds
more money,
more value,
more money.
Yeah.
All right. Well, where were we? Well, that was Batman.
Did we talk about the book actually?
It doesn't matter.
All right. Hey, Batman number 59 is available at your local comic book shop today.
All right. Here's a book that's getting a lot of press these days.
It is.
Justice League Dark number 5. Ah. Justice League Dark. So basically, it's the Justice League, but with
dark.
All the darker characters. So. You've got, you know, like Zatanna is in it.
Well, she's awfully dark.
Yeah, you know, and it's got
Morbid.
Swamp Thing.
Swamp Thing.
It's got, this one actually has Detective Chimp.
Detective
in it.
Chimp.
Yeah, so it's got sort of your offshoot kind of characters, well, besides Wonder Woman.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Constantine and Swamp Thing, as I said, Dr. Fate. So there's lots of, like, sort of the also-ran characters in this, which but makes it for a very interesting book because I don't know if you're a little bit like me, I get a little bored of Batman and Superman. I want to see something different for a change.
Mm. Yeah, Man-Bat's in this, isn't it?
I think that's Man-Bat. Yeah,
yeah I'm
I didn't,
pretty sure that's Man-Bat.
Yeah.
Yeah, this looks pretty cool. And it is
Detective.
It's
no.
Justice League Dark number 5.
Yep.
And it's at your local comic book shop. And this is one of those, I'm holding a good looking book in my hand.
It is
hand.
A good looking
this
book.
This is the, let me get this right.
Yep.
The blank. No, not the blank.
Nope. Close.
The close cover.
No.
See what I did with that?
You got a million of them.
I grabbed onto the first thing I can grab onto.
It's a
Virgin cover.
Yep.
Ah, that's the Virgin cover, which means there's no big mass logo
that's
on
right.
the top of
that's
the book.
That's right. I like those books a lot. Yeah.
Really cool. So you can enjoy the art.
Yeah.
It's at your local comic book shop today.
Yes. Okay, what else we got here? We got, I'm going to go with this one first here. Mars Attacks. So
Mars Attacks.
I think they talked about this when it first came out about a month ago. Mars Attacks number 2 is out today. And this, of course, is sort of an ongoing idea from that was based on the movie, which was based off the card, the Topps Cards comics from like the 1950s or 60s. I don't really remember because
uh-huh.
I'm not that old. But yeah, it's licensed by Topps. But it's basically the idea that the United States, well, the world is being... taken over by aliens. Remember Tim Burton that did that movie like 20 years ago or something like that,
mm-hmm.
Mars Attacks? Anyways, this is sort of another telling of the same kind of story, same stuff going on. But there you go.
Yeah. I think this property, I don't know how it's still around, right? It seemed like one of those kind of niche
yeah.
in the moment properties. I kind of put it along the same vein as, let's say, Rocky Horror Picture Show, maybe, or yep. something like that. Yep. And it's just like, these things don't want to go away. It's like,
well, you know, somebody picks up on it, and the idea comes around, and then all of a sudden, people are interested in it again. But, you know, for something like this, I'm surprised that it's still there, because there hasn't been anything besides this in years.
Yeah. Anyway, hey, check out Mars Attacks number 2. It's at your local comic book shop.
All right. And finally, we've got, you know, I know you don't watch a lot of cartoons and things like that, but one of the more popular and extremely well-written cartoons of the last few years is...
Ren and Stimpy.
Ren and Stimpy came out about 30 years ago.
Oh.
But thanks for coming out.
It was a good guess, I thought.
Not even close. Rick and Morty.
Rick and Morty.
You know, but you're right in a sense that it was two characters.
Right.
So Rick and Morty.
So is Ben and Jerry.
Well, they're not characters. They're real people who own an ice cream place. But yeah.
Good ice cream.
It is good ice cream.
It's really good ice cream.
What's that one, Cherry Garcia, based off of Jerry Garcia? Yeah.
Cherry Garcia is fantastic.
So we got Rick and Morty, and of course they have their own comic book now. Their series has been renewed for another like 80 episodes or something ridiculous like that. So anyways, one of the more popular episodes of this TV series is the Pickle Rick episode.
I don't know.
That's probably the right response.
Lucy,
so
please explain.
So basically, to make a long story short, Rick is he's this mad scientist. He's okay. Think of Rick and Morty. Think of Back to the Future with Marty and Doc Brown.
Right.
So Rick and Morty is basically a parody of that.
Right.
So you get the kid and the crazy doctor. So Rick is the crazy doctor and Morty is the kid. Morty a la Marty, right? Mm-hmm. So anyways, in one of the episodes...
McFly.
Yeah. So in one of the episodes, Rick, who's the mad scientist, doesn't want to go somewhere. So he says that he gets accidentally turned into a pickle. But it turns out it was all a big sham that he knew how to get out of it, but something happens and he can't get out of it, so he ends up being what they call Pickle Rick for a while.
Oh.
And so Pickle Rick then somehow he manufactures arms and legs and all these things, and it's one of the funnier episodes of the whole series. And
well, I can't wait to read it based on your description.
I can't do it justice. It's a show you got to watch.
Right. Hey, Rick and Marty.
Morty
and Marty. Present Pickle Rick, and that's at your local comic book shop today. And that's by Oni Press. And Chris, you've picked, I don't know, 17 of them here.
Yeah,
at least
28.
And there's at least that many more at your local comic book shop today. So you owe it to yourself to run in and check out the new this week.
All right, let's have a quick musical interlude here, and then we're going to come back and talk a little bit more about comics. Let's do this one all about hobbits.
Wonderful, Chris. Doesn't that want to make you run through a meadow naked?
It really does, doesn't it? Well, I don't know about naked, but...
Well, that's the only way to run through a meadow.
Yeah, but what about thistles and things?
That's what makes it interesting.
if you like that sort of thing, I suppose,
That was good. Now, who did... Like, that's from The Hobbit, the movie, right?
From Lord of the Rings... I believe it's the Fellowship of the Rings.
Now, what did you play at the top of the show? Because I liked that too. That I forgot to ask you.
So that was actually the Avengers theme song from the Avengers movie.
Right, right.
So I believe it's by Alan Silvestri. That one was so.
Alan.
Alan. Yeah.
Wonderful. All right, Chris. That brings us to industry news, and industry news is brought to us by the Elijah Craig Small Batch Club Soda. Yeah, it's Kentucky's own club soda.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it's listen, if you're in Kentucky,
yeah,
there's a few things going on.
Oh.
There's the hats.
The hats.
The race.
The race.
The fried chicken.
You mean talking about the Kentucky Derby?
Yes.
Oh, or just in general.
Kentucky Derby. You know, the hats. Which one do they wear the hats in? Is that the Kentucky Derby?
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's the one. Well, yeah. Okay.
Let's explain everything.
Okay, but that's the Kentucky Derby. You said it just in Kentucky.
No, in Kentucky.
Yeah.
There's not very many things that are really important.
So.
Boy, I don't know if we're going to get paid.
But hold
for
on a second here. Wait a second.
Okay, go ahead.
You said in Kentucky.
Yeah.
Are you talking about the Kentucky Derby or are
no,
you talking
in
about
Kentucky,
in Kentucky?
The state.
So you're saying
this
people,
is where Elijah Craig Small Batch Club
So you're
soda
saying people just
made.
Wear hats in Kentucky?
Well, no. Kentucky
That's what
is
you're telling
known
me here.
For.
They're known for hats.
They're known for hats.
I don't believe you.
The race.
The race, yes.
Fried chicken.
Yes.
And Elijah Craig
and
club
apparently
soda.
Hats
and club soda
and hats.
Man, I'm trying to sell this club soda, and hats.
Okay.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah.
Like everybody wears hats down there.
They do cool. they?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. A lot of them say John Deere on them, but they're still hats.
You know what? I have no proof, so I'm just gonna have to believe you.
You know, I think you're gonna have to.
Yeah. All right.
But,
fair enough.
You know, if I say it, it
well,
should be
yeah.
believable.
If you say it, it must be true.
Uh-huh. Hey, Chris, let's talk. What I wanted to talk about was, hold on. Let me, what the heck did I want to talk about?
I don't know. Yeah. I can't get in that.
Oh, yeah, that, man, I was on.
Stan Lee?
Have you ever, no, the Heritage Auction thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So I was on Heritage Auction. I had the harebrained scheme.
Yeah.
Of trying to win some really cool books cheap on Heritage Auctions.
Oh, how'd that work out for
that
you?
That didn't happen.
Yeah.
Not even close. So what was really interesting was some of the results on that. And one of the, I'm going to call it headline-grabbing results of that Heritage auction was in the original art portion of the auction. Where,
right.
I don't know if you and I have ever talked about it where... what's his name? Craigstein?
Bernie Craigstein?
Yeah. He did a famous 8-page story back in 1955 in Impact Number 1 called The Master Race.
Right.
That went up on, under the auction block.
Oh, okay, cool.
And it was an 8-page story. Yep. And it sold for $600,000.
$600,000.
Yeah. Comic art from the 1950s.
That's crazy.
Without a superhero on it.
Wow. Yeah, right.
Yeah. And a very controversial story. It was probably one of the first stories in comics to tackle the issue of the Holocaust.
Right.
Of that chapter in history.
Yeah, yeah.
And also, though, for comic art purists like yourself even... that understand comic art, what Bernie Craigstein did with that story was he laid out different visual ways. Like he was very, very innovative and visual ways of storytelling, sequential art, panel settings,
right.
The way he plotted and backgrounded and laid out his pages was, you know, like revolutionary for the time.
Absolutely, yes.
And it influenced guys like Miller and guys like Starenko that came later, right?
Yeah.
So this is like on a multi-level, an important piece of artwork.
Yeah, so I mean, it's
the historical significance.
Historical significance.
And the artistic significance.
Artistic significance. Yes. And the fact that it was done by Impact Comics, which was in 1955, and this is on the heels of the Wortham Seduction
of the
Innocent.
This was a New Direction book. This
was
a New Direction.
It was number
book.
One.
Yeah, yeah.
So they didn't put it. They couldn't put it in Vault of Horror.
This book was told. This was storytelling. This wasn't graphic thing. This was storytelling. This was like, told the story of. Basically, in New York, somebody recognizes somebody that committed crimes.
Right,
you know, that kind of stuff in that time. So, The interesting part about it that I found is that it was bought by an actual museum in I think it's in Holland or Belgium.
In Belgium, yeah.
In Belgium. So this is, you know, it's like, wow. You know, they thought enough of it that they're going to basically display
they're gonna spend
and
the money
exhibition
and,
it and all this kind of stuff and have people come in and actually admire that artwork like they would, you know, I don't know, a Renoir.
Yeah,
like
so
that, you know?
It's interesting because, you know, first of all, it's interesting on a couple levels. One, it's a museum.
Uh-huh.
So the museum is the Boone Foundation for Narrative Graphic Arts in Belgium.
Uh-huh.
So, but it's interesting that, for one, that they would spend $600,000 on this these pieces of artwork. But two, that they're going to actually, it's not a private collection. It's going to be displayed like it's, you know.
Which I think is fantastic.
It's awesome.
Which is what you want.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you're lucky enough to be in Belgium or if you're visiting in that area, you know, I would highly recommend going to take a look at this. This is historical beyond the means, right?
Now, Chris, I don't know if, what the heck is that? We used to go on school trips north of Toronto, that McMurray.
It's the McMichael.
McMichael
Museum. Yeah.
Art gallery.
Yep.
And what they would have is the Group of Seven paintings.
Yes.
And I remember going up there, and you can have put headphones on when you're looking at a Thompson.
Yeah.
And that headphone, the art critic will take your eye to certain parts of the thing.
Right.
A tour guide also would talk about. You know, they take you through and they go, okay, you know, this was painted in 1911.
Yeah.
And this is what was going on, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I'm sure that this just isn't going to be eight framed pieces hanging beside each other.
No.
I think there's going to be like some investment into a tour guide's learning the importance of it, pointing out the innovative style that he used, pointing out the revolutionary
and
things that he introduced in terms of sequential art. I think this is going to be very cool.
This should be used as an educational piece on many levels,
right?
Not just historical, but like not just historical for the content, and not just historical for the fact that this was being talked about in that content in that context, but also in this innovative art storytelling, So it's interesting artwork. Now, I do have to say that if you do want to check it out, you can actually go to comicbookdaily.com, and you can go to, I believe it's Art for Art's Sake. You check it out. You can see all the eight pieces up there on comicbookdaily.com.
Yeah, Scott has posted it on comicbookdaily.com.
Yep, so you can check that
it'll
out.
It'll be one of the recent posts.
Yes.
It'll be on the front page.
So interesting. Very, very interesting.
Yeah, so like I said, I didn't get any.
Okay.
But I didn't win anything.
So, but here's the thing.
Here's the thing.
So, you know, you and I have talked a lot in the past about original artwork. And so this continues to tell me, and I think it should continue to tell everybody, that comic book original artwork is still something that it is highly sought after.
Mm-hmm.
It's you know, it is important, but yet I still, as expensive as some of this stuff is getting, I still feel like it's an untapped marketplace.
There's room.
There's still room.
There's room for appreciation.
You know, certainly it's getting harder and harder. I mean, when I first started buying sketches and things like that, you could buy them for $20-$30 a piece. Now those same ones are $300-$400.
Now they're like $35-$40 each.
I wish I'd still be buying them.
Buy some more.
Yeah, but certainly it's an untapped marketplace. But even at some of these prices.
Yeah. Well, I struck out. That's not true.
What were you going for?
What I did win is I won a couple of comics. Like, I didn't buy art. I bought comics. I won a couple of actually not a couple. I think I won one of. Charles Biro early Crime Does Not
Pay. Oh, nice. Yeah, yeah.
There was one cover I really liked. It was like a shoot 'em up cover where it was baby carriage, you know. Gangster pops out of a baby carriage with a machine gun and riddling cops with machine gun fire. And so I go, wow, that's pretty cool. But I don't know what I paid for, less than $800.
Did you win it?
So, yeah, I won but I thought it was cool. But man, what I found was this is what I found on that on that auction.
What'd you find?
I found that
I
found in general that like heavily traded comics over the last 2-3 years, superhero, silver, bronze, I found them soft.
Ah, okay. You just piqued my interest in something here.
I did?
Yeah. You said heavily traded. Uh-huh. And this is something I've been meaning to ask you for a long time.
All right.
Now, you're an old-time comic collector.
Sure.
Right? And as am I. Do you think that when it comes to comic collecting, you've clearly bought and sold lots.
Yes.
Okay. Do you find that, have you bought and sold the same, I'm talking that, you know, if it has a signature on the cover or some kid's scribble, the exact same book multiple times?
Yes, I have.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, yes, I
like,
have.
Like, it'll come to you and you'll be like, hey, I remember selling this, you know, I remember buying this 20 years ago.
Yeah, yes, something. I have. I remember, back 20 years ago, we had a Green Lantern number 5 from the Golden Age.
Okay.
I think we had $200 on it
or
something. And I remember having that, and then I remember one day not having it. And then... And then I remember a year later, I'm walking in and my guy's going, hey, some guy came in with comics and I bought them. And there was that same Green Lantern number 5 that we bought back off the guy that probably stole it from us a year ago. So, but no, I know, like, I have identified books that come around.
You know,
and go
like,
around.
I just know that, like, even when I've bought and sold books, I'm like, hey, I remember owning this one.
Yeah,
and,
yeah, yeah.
You know. And it's just. What made me think of it was when you said heavily traded. You know, as large as the comic book industry is, for, you know, when it comes down to collecting and when it comes to collecting certain titles and certain eras of certain titles, it can become pretty small, that group of people,
you're right.
So it doesn't surprise me when all of a sudden, you know, a book that may have like a Daredevil number 2, which I had signed by Stan Lee 20 years ago, for me to see it again and be like, hey, I got that signed.
I knew exactly where he signed it.
I remember. It's just interesting.
Yeah. No, I mean... Yeah, but the heavily traded ones, for some reason, like, I think in general, because there's an ongoing Comic Link auction right now that's ending, I think, next week, and a Comic Connect auction that's ending the week after, or something like that. I'm not sure exactly when they're ending. And there's been recent auction endings. And what I'm seeing anyway is like the things that we see all the time, like... Hulk 181s and Spider-Man 129s and Daredevil 1s. I'm not going to say the prices are going down, though they are really soft and maybe giving back a little bit. But, Chris, there's been such a run-up in value of those things. That it was almost an unhealthy, absolutely an unsustainable, unhealthy run-up on
totally.
Those books.
And, I mean,
they need to... It needs to stale
out a bit.
Yeah, as a friend of mine would say, a little haircut's in order. You know?
Well, and you know, I remember... okay, so I've got two questions for you.
Yes,
one, do you think that... let's say I wanted to go out and buy a Hulk 181, whatever the grade happens to be.
Yes.
Am I at risk of that going down in price?
It already has.
Okay.
In the last 3 months.
But... Okay, so in your professional opinion, though,
yes.
If it already has, is it going to continue and is now...
one of those things where you don't know exactly at what point it troughs, but it will come back, if that's your question.
Right, that's my question.
I think it will come back. Okay. I think in order for it not to come back, the whole industry has to...
you're not a fortune teller and you don't have a crystal ball.
Yeah, but in general, the trend is toward... with comic books, when you're buying for... pleasure and fun and investing, you know, I'm gonna pull out a number, Chris, but I'm gonna say 150.
Okay
there are probably 150 comics that you can't go wrong with.
Right.
There is such a weight to them, a cultural significance and importance, a deep, heavy fan base, instant recognition in terms of the cover.
Yeah.
They're iconic pop culture covers even that are on, you know, people get tattoos on, you know what I'm saying?
Right,
it's an identifiable image, and it's like... In a way, like I'll use, we've used this before, and I don't want to spend too much time on this, Chris, but Suspense Comics number 3.
Right.
You once quizzed me, and I got it wrong. I thought it was Pep 22.
Right.
You quizzed me on the comic, non-superhero comic that at that time got the record market price.
Right.
And it was Suspense Comic 3. It was Alex Schomburg, yeah. Kind of gruesome. Girl, yeah, girl tied up, about to be executed, but the hero comes in and saves her, like Nazis,
yeah,
and
yeah.
Hooded Nazis and all this kind of stuff. And my point is this, that cover, that image... It's kind of like the Mona Lisa of comics in
right.
a way.
Right.
Hear me out.
Yeah, yeah.
The Mona Lisa is a good painting. It's similar to many other paintings of the period.
Yeah.
But we give the Mona Lisa such importance.
Right.
Like such importance.
Right.
Above and beyond what the painting itself deserves.
Right, right.
In a way.
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah, because there are other paintings of that time that the composition and you know, whatever is just as good or almost as good.
Right.
Certainly not 100-fold poorer,
sure,
like right
sure,
now,
yes.
Is because yep. the Mona Lisa has its own room now in the Louvre,
right.
which is, you know, the world's greatest museum,
yeah,
and it's got its own room,
yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's a lot of comics like that will just hold value because they are bigger than they actually are,
right?
And I think my point is Hulk 181 is one of those.
Okay,
right.
So
Spidey 129 is another.
Okay, so my second question
yep.
to that is, which is very, you kind of led me up to this.
Uh-huh.
A lot of those books that you're talking about now are unattainable for a lot of the population.
Mm-hmm.
They're very expensive. So what does a person do if they want to get into this stuff, but they can't necessarily afford the big books?
Well, here's the next trend, the trend that maybe we should have saw 5 years ago, but we didn't. And it's the, how can I say this, Chris? Help me out here.
I don't know what you're getting at.
The entry level market.
Collecting.
Yeah. So we can't afford it.
Yeah.
So 5 years ago, for example, if I were to say to you 5 years ago, Chris, let's go buy that 0.5 Hulk 181.
Right.
You would go, well, what are you? Like,
what's the point?
Nuts.
Yeah.
You're crazy.
Yeah.
Are you,
yeah.
What
yeah.
are you? Like, why would I want that rag?
Right.
Right. Or if you were to go to me, well, let's go buy that Detective 36 or whatever, I'm making up a number.
Yeah.
It's really old, but it has brittle pages.
Right.
I hate brittle pages. I don't like brittle pages.
Right.
You open a book and it just disintegrates.
Right, right, right.
But what happens, Chris, is this. When they're encapsulated,
Yes.
You cannot, brittle pages don't matter.
It doesn't matter once they're in the book, once they're in there, yeah.
And if it's a 0.5, what does that matter?
Yeah.
What does it matter that the inside is chewed and this and that, or even that the back cover is chewed, this and that?
Right.
You're buying it to have a copy of Hulk 181.
Right.
And to that point, we could have bought a 0.5 6 years ago for, I'm just going to guess, $100.
Right.
They are now $1,000.
Right.
Just ridiculous.
Okay.
Because what you say.
Yeah.
More and more people want a copy of Hulk 181.
Yeah.
They can't afford the $10,000 copy, so they're going after the $200 copy.
Right.
But then too many guys are going after that, and then it's a $300 copy, and then even more people are going after that, and then
right.
it's a $500 copy, and that darn thing is now $1,000.
Right, 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 right.
Which is a good sign because that means a lot of people want it.
Right.
Or else it wouldn't run up in price like that.
Right. So,
But these are trends because once the book is encapsulated,
yeah.
It is. You cannot look at it.
No. Nope.
You can't open it.
No. Nope.
You can't. The back is even irrelevant.
Right. Right.
So as long as it's a presentable looking cover.
Right.
And you can say you own the whole thing.
Yeah.
Like there's not pages missing or something. You know. That's where.
Okay.
The
so
is
right what now. Do you do? Okay. What do you do when you? Now we're getting to the point. Now it seems. So 6 years ago, you could buy that book for $100, but now you can't.
Right.
So are there books on the market that are, that you, in your opinion, going to be collectible because people can't, like, so for example, is it good enough to buy Hulk 182, right?
Yeah.
Are there books out there that are close to being collectible, but not in that list of 150 books that you're saying are absolute must-haves.
Right.
But is there a secondary 100 books out there?
Right, yeah. There probably is. There probably is, like the, you know, Suspense 3 you can't own, but there are, like, for example, Phantom Lady 17, the classic Baker cover.
Yeah.
Not many people can own that, but there's, I think, number 15 or 19 or whatever. It's almost as good.
Right.
It's the
right.
same Phantom Lady, kind yeah, of yeah. roughly the same pose, but not that. You know, when you nail it,
yeah,
as an artist,
yeah, yeah,
when you
yeah.
nail it
yeah,
and
yeah,
it says
yeah.
18 different things to yeah. you, that's Phantom Lady 17.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
Whereas 19 or 15, whatever the cover was, it's almost it. But you can't afford $10,000 for the 17, so you spend $1,800 on the 19. That's your Phantom Lady cover by Matt Baker.
Yeah.
Sexy cover.
Yeah.
Right?
Now, what
so
if
you have it.
What if somebody wanted to spend $50?
Right.
Is there anything people can buy in the less than $100 range to try to collect?
Tons of things. Absolutely tons of things. You just kind of have to be... first of all, I think at that... if you're spending that much, you can't spend to get rich.
Right.
So you can't target that money on profit alone.
Right.
What you have to target that money for is personal pleasure and profit.
Okay.
Slash
all right.
profit.
Yeah.
You know what
yeah.
I mean? So what you have to do is say, hey, I really like this. I really like this character. I really like that. I'm going to zero in on, great. Hey, use your eye. Like, use your eye. You know, a friend of mine and I did an exercise recently. We went through, remember the Gerber photo journal?
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Yeah.
So we went through there and go, why the heck doesn't anybody know about this cover? This is the coolest cover I've
right,
ever seen.
Right.
And I'll give you an example on the Ms. Mary Marvel.
Yeah.
Mary Marvel.
Yeah.
I was looking, there was a couple of Mile High copies, which is like a pedigree, and they're all 9.6. It's like ridiculous grades on these. Anyway, but Mary Marvel covers are kind of lame.
Right.
You know, she's...
They're very lame.
Well, there was one issue where she's smacking a villain,
yeah.
and this villain is made up legs, arms, head, and torso of all dice. Die.
Okay, yeah,
right?
yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so it's like the Dice Man or something.
Oh,
like
cool,
that.
Yeah, yeah.
But it looked super, super cool.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Unlike, because all the other ones are Mary Marvel smiling
right.
and flying
yeah,
with
yeah.
a rainbow behind.
Yeah,
right?
yeah, yeah.
You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas in this one is just like, whoa, why isn't this character developed?
Yeah,
that kind
yeah,
of
interesting,
thing.
Yeah.
And,
okay.
and that book sold for double to triple. Compared to all the other issues around it.
Oh, interesting.
Because there were so many people saying, whoa!
That's a cool book.
That is a cool book.
Right.
That is a cool cover.
Right.
So when you're going to a show and you're looking through, let's say, a lame title like House of Mystery or Strange
yeah,
Adventures
yeah.
or you look through it and look through it and you go, whoa, look at this
yeah,
cover.
Yeah, yeah,
look at this cover.
So basically,
my
the,
goodness,
what you're saying is you have to take time
yeah.
and effort to yeah. actually go through these things and it's not...
What I'm saying is there are tons of covers, silver and gold,
yeah.
that aren't discovered yet.
Oh, interesting. All right.
Discover them. Go
yeah, that's a great point. All right. You know what? Sorry, I kind of hijacked the show a little
Hi,
bit there.
Yeah.
Let's have a quick musical interlude here. What are we going to talk? What are we going to play here? Let's see.
Let's play one.
All right. Let's,
anyone. Give me something with a C. A bouncy C. Well, it was fantastic. Oh, it's still going on. Chris, that's what you get when you're on live radio.
You know what that was? Huh. You don't even know what that was, dude.
Of course I do.
Well, okay. Well, you know what? I'm not, you know, I don't want to embarrass you.
Yes.
So I know
exactly what it was.
Okay, what was that?
That was the ode, the requiem to the Opus Penguin.
Opus Penguin. So you talking about, first of all, I don't even know where to begin here. Opus was a penguin in the Doonesbury. Was it Doonesbury or no?
Bloom County.
Bloom County, rather, mm-hmm. Yeah. That was The Duel of the Fates by John Williams in Star Wars Episode I, The Phantom Menace.
I had a suspicion that was it.
Yeah, yeah.
But
yeah,
I went with the Opus Penguin because I thought it would be funnier.
Yeah, well, you know.
Yeah.
You thought lots of things.
Hey, listen. It brings us on to the part deux.
Is that all it is? Part two? I feel like we've been going on forever.
Yeah,
forever.
Tell me about it. Brought to us by our new sponsors, the Elijah Craig Small Batch Club Soda.
Do you have any more of that, by the way?
We do. Okay. My friend Ruth.
Your friend
says,
Ruth.
Says that this club soda puts the sparkle into her marriage.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah.
She swears by it.
Really? Interesting.
She says by the fifth glass, she's fine.
I'm more surprised that you have a friend named Ruth.
Oh, okay. Anyway.
Or a friend in general.
In general, right.
You know what? Yeah, but that is true. You know, by the fifth glass, it's pretty good.
Yeah, by the fifth glass, you're happy with anybody you're with.
Hey, can I have a little more of that, by the way?
Oh, of course
you
can.
Yeah, okay, thank you. Well, hey, what do you want to talk about?
Hold on.
Oh, hey,
that's the club soda,
that's
the
club
effervescence.
Soda, yep.
Can you see the
sparkling is just craziness. It just keeps on bubbling. That's great. Thank you.
That's not the club soda that's bubbling, Chris.
Are we talking about Stan Lee? What are we going to talk about?
Let's talk about Stan Lee.
What do you want to talk about with Stan Lee?
The late, great Stan Lee.
The late, great Stan Lee. So lots of stuff going on with Stan Lee.
Well, I wanted to give an eBay counter update.
Hmm.
When you and I did the show last week, we mentioned that on November the 12th, the day Stan Lee passed away, there was about 15,000-ish items.
Right.
If you typed in Stan Lee
on
the bar on ebay.com.
Yep.
And by the time you and I did the show on Wednesday,
it was
over 25,000-ish. So in the 2 days or day and a half, 10,000 items. People were really busy.
You did a test yesterday.
Yes.
What was the test yesterday?
It was at 40,000 items.
40,000.
40,000 Stan Lee items available on eBay as of late yesterday. Yeah.
Now, we all know and love Stan Lee, but there's one guy that doesn't.
Which guy's that? I want to know.
Bill Maher. Bill Maher recently has been in the news because
that guy sucks.
He made a comment, he talked about Stan Lee's death, and he made a comment. I'm going to sum it up here saying that he inspired people to, I don't know, go see a movie.
Mm-hmm.
And for anybody that's anybody, the way he goes on to talk about how, you know, basically he grew up and, you know, comics are for kids and, you know, I stopped reading books with pictures a long time ago, yada, yada, yada.
He's an intellectual. Chris.
Right. I'm summing up.
He would not go to Belgium to see Craig Steen's display, that's for sure.
And here's the thing. This is coming from a guy that clearly does not know anything about comic books or about the...
Anything in general,
the social implications, political implications, the art form in general. Like, you know, here's a guy that's so misinformed, and it's almost laughable.
Well, okay, first my just general critique on Bill Maher. I've seen the show a few times. He has this ability or annoying... he likes to have people on that share his opinion.
Right.
And the moment he has somebody on that doesn't and that are confrontational, what I've seen happen is he will laugh it off, default to some sort of shtick, you know, kind of liberal line, and then basically not let the person, like, I mean, he's been put in a spot so many times on that show.
Yeah.
And rather than delve into the debate and really take your gloves off and actually debate, he doesn't. He just, you know, moves to commercials, changes the subject, does whatever, right? Because it's annoying to watch sometimes, but whatever. He's a successful man and he has a show.
Yeah.
But you're right. About this, same thing.
But then, now there's a backlash.
Yeah. Was there?
Oh, huge backlash. Oh,
okay. I didn't know.
Huge backlash online.
Right.
Basically, you get.
But he'll say, "Hey, what do I care about Gweebs?"
Well, but you know what? It's not just the comic community that's doing it.
Right.
I shouldn't say it's not just the comic fan base that's doing it.
Uh-huh.
You're getting respected writers and people who are you know, chiming in on the topic, saying clearly, saying, you know, I'm sum upping here as basically saying you don't know what you're talking about
right.
here.
Right.
This is a fantastic medium, and you're really missing out.
So you tried to act like this intellectual guy, you know, dismissing this man's life work as child's play.
That's right.
And you look like a doofus doing
it. Yeah, that's right.
Which is what he did. Because, I mean, we've gone over it before, and it's not necessarily, you know, first of all, Stan revolutionized the way comic stories were told, obviously. But second off, as like you mentioned in the last show, Chris, the man used his standing to further social justice.
Well, I wanted to,
like that, did he forget about that?
Well, I was really trying to think about, is there a possible, I can't wrap my head around it, but is there a possible way that we could try to think about how comics would be today without a guy like Stan Lee?
I don't think they'd be around.
Well, and this is the thing that I'm trying to think of.
They wouldn't be around.
What? I think they'd be around.
I don't know.
I don't know if they'd have the same impact.
They'd be around small press. They'd be small press.
Small press.
Yeah. It'd be a whole bunch of.
Would it still be kiddie comics? You know, and I mean
course,
that in
course,
the best
but
of ways.
In different maybe formats.
You know, here's a guy, and this is the thing that I don't understand is how can you dismiss a guy like Stan Lee who would bring real life issues to the forefront,
uh-huh.
And so to talk about comics as if they're kids, I just don't get it. It's for someone like you or I who are so enveloped in it, I can't think about it.
I think something he's forgetting too is, or he's not forgetting. Obviously, doesn't know. Obviously, not well read on it. But in the 1960s. The spearhead of fans for Marvel Comics were not 10-year-old kids.
No.
They were university students.
Right.
Like, he was revolutionizing, he was creating, social issue concepts, but also, like, cool scientific sci-fi concepts and cool, like, I don't know, he was telling stories that related to young people that aren't little kids. They
right,
were like people
right.
that were finding themselves and exploring different possibilities and
totally.
Just freaking out and overreading things like the Galactus trilogy and all that kind of stuff. And so, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I even hate giving this guy airtime.
I know.
But,
you know, we won't talk about it anymore. I think it was important to talk about it very briefly though, because I think, you know, and there's lots of debates on the importance of a guy like Stan Lee. I think the reality of it is, without a guy like Stan Lee, the medium would not be what it is today.
Well, you know what? I'm gonna end it with a prediction.
What's that?
With the prediction. There's a lot of late night guys that try to say sensational things to get press.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hollow.
Right.
They'll be forgotten. And then there are some figures in history that will grow in stature and really become even more revered than they are.
It's
and
great.
Stan Lee will be one of them.
Great point, because you know what? 20 years from now, no one's going to know who Bill Maher
who?
Is. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Exactly. And Stan Lee, oh my God, Stan Lee. Yeah,
that's right.
I've read about him.
Yep.
He's in history books, and this is what
right.
he did. And this is, yeah.
You know, when I was in college.
That's the best kind of... in your face thing you can pretty well
totally
give a guy, so.
And you know what's when I was in to college when I was in university many years ago now, I remember I had a professor that would said to me once that he turned to me, he said, you know, because I was a comic nerd back then,
uh-huh.
and he said, you know, you're gonna be the historian,
uh-huh.
you know, you're going to be the guy that teaches about this stuff
right.
50 years from now. You're going to be the one that knows about all this
right,
stuff
right, right,
because
right.
of its importance that people are not understanding today.
Right.
And I dismissed him at the time.
Right.
And I'm not saying I am that guy, but I'm certainly, this is some stuff that's coming to fruition, right?
Chris, you are that guy.
you're a kind man.
You are.
You're a kind man. Listen, we've only got a few minutes left. What do you want to talk about?
Let's talk about, so I was on my computer there, and I what do you call
that? I don't want to know about that.
No. Those movies you watch. You know, those.
I really don't want to know about that.
The trailer, the Aquaman thing.
Ah, trailers.
I saw something that got the brand new Aquaman trailer.
Yes, dropped. So, yes.
You know, I'm not going to lie. I can't lie on this show.
No, never
Especially
lie.
Especially not drinking Elijah Craig Small Batch Club Soda.
Nice.
I haven't seen an Aquaman trailer yet, I think. I think I might have seen the very first one.
Okay.
So I don't even know if I'm lying or not now. This is really complicated.
Oh, boy. Okay.
And so I watched this one.
Yep.
I go, this is going to be cool. And I don't know.
You know
this
what?
This is the last last official trailer for Aquaman. It was visually, it's a trailer, right? So
yep.
In the 1.5 minutes, there was probably 38 cuts.
Right.
You know,
edit,
visual thing.
Okay, so I got an axe here. You know, is it because Jason Momoa, the actor, doesn't look like Arthur Curry, the character of Aquaman?
No.
Okay. No. Has nothing to do with that.
Nothing to do with that.
Okay.
It's the sensory overload I was getting.
Well, but trailers are designed to do that, right? So trailers are always supposed to be like that.
Yeah.
Right?
You know what I did notice?
What's that?
You know what I did notice? There was a scene, trailer alert. No, trailer alert. That's
spoiler
wrong.
Alert.
Spoiler
alert. Beep, beep. Trailer alert.
Trailer alert. Back up that trailer.
Beep, beep, beep. Yeah.
There were some scenes like on top of a cliff.
Yeah.
And the cinematography was
beautiful.
Epic and fantastic.
Yeah.
But that was natural.
Right.
And then there were some scenes like underwater.
Yes.
And that looked forced.
But see, I've seen some of the scenes underwater and I thought it looked good. You know, and I think in short bursts, you might think it looks
maybe
forced.
Because they were just hitting me with too much.
Right, but I think in the context of the whole movie, I'm hoping I should say, is that it's going to seem natural, right?
I don't want to sound like an old fuddy-duddy.
Well, too late, but go on.
I just hope they don't pack it with shock and awe so much that it detracts from the story. I think the majority of moviegoers would want a slower, better told story version than a, oh my goodness, all the CGI and all
I,
of that.
I think so too. And
you
I think,
know what I mean?
But the director, James Wan, I don't know how to say his name properly. But you know what? He's one of the two guys that started the whole, Saw franchise. He helped write and direct that Saw movie with Jigsaw and all that. And the story itself is really interesting. If you take away all the blood and gore and that kind of stuff, the story is interesting. So I'm hoping that he can bring that same storytelling technique to a movie like Aquaman. You know, the only thing I'm worried about, which a lot of superhero movies find themselves in, is they try to tell too much.
Yeah, and that's what I sensed
right
with the trailer. It was just
because you know what, already if you look at the characters, you've got you've got Mera and Black Manta, and you've got Ocean Master and all these different people.
Yeah.
And cool, traditionally one of those characters would be enough, let alone five or whatever they've got.
So. Hey, do you think they'll have those Easter bunnies at the end to set up something else?
We'll see. It's
'cause Marvel always does that.
I know.
Love
DC's
those
not very good at that though.
I know.
Yeah. Anyways, we're running out of time.
Hey, that's it for the show. Comic Culture. We're on 93.3 CFMU, McMaster's award-winning radio station. Thanks to us. And we're on comicbookdaily.com. Please enter your comments on the comments field. Let us know what you thought. And please go out and support your local comic book shop.
And have yourself a great day.